22-year-old Charleston, South Carolina church shooter Dylan Roof was sentenced to death for the hate crime murder of 9 African-American churchgoers that shocked the nation nearly 2 years ago. The jury of 9 white and 3 blacks, who last month found him guilty of 33 counts, reached a unanimous verdict within about 3 hours. Meg Kennard is political and legal affairs reporter for the Associated Press based in South Carolina. She's been covering the shooting and the trial for nearly 2 years now. It's felt at times like a mechanical process, but she says the emotional tension has been there in court since the first drop of the gavel.
Dylan Roof acknowledged in his very brief closing arguments he could have asked the jury to spare his life and didn't. In fact, he said that he didn't think that even really make much of a difference. He did make a closing argument. He took the opportunity to say his piece to the jury, but it wasn't a pleading. It wasn't, you know, please don't sentence me to death for this. I mean, there was none of that. If anything, his strongest statement that he made was that he'd do it all over again because he feels like he had to. I'm not on that jury. I wasn't privy to their discussions, but hearing that directly from the man whose fate they're weighing likely played a pretty big role in their discussions. Having watched this trial unfold over these past few weeks, to hear a defendant go in front of the jury and say, you know I could ask you guys to not to execute me, but I'm not going to. I can't imagine being a jury hearing that and then going back to deliberate and spending a whole lot of time talking about anything but a death sentence.
Given what you just said, that Dylan Roof in his statement indicated he would do it all again, I guess he didn't address the victims in any direct way.
No, he didn't. They certainly were paying close attention to what he said, but he expressed no regret. A lot of attention during the guilt phase of trial and also particularly during sentencing focused on a jailhouse journal that Roof kept that was found in his cell at the Charleston County Jail about 6 weeks after he was arrested. That journal contained a lot of the same information from his online manifesto, thoughts about the races, thoughts about white supremacy. In those writings, he also said that he wanted to make one thing crystal clear, that he had not shed a single tear for the families of any of the people that he killed. You know, hearing that kind of information and those kinds of words coming directly from the person after the fact, at a time where a lot of defendants would express remorse, maybe, or have second thoughts, he wanted to make it clear and double down, in a way, on what he had done. And that's hard to ignore, I guess, when you're a jury considering these very serious cases.
Dylan Roof made a motion right after the sentencing, or the announcement of the sentence from the jury. What did that mean, do you think?
It's hard to say. Far be it for me to prognosticate. This case has been full of surprises. But Dylan Roof did ask the judge if he could have a new legal team to then for him make a motion for a new trial. I believe Dylan Roof has, by statute, 90 days to file an appeal in this case. And the judge said that, you know, he was very reluctant to appoint a new legal team to handle what Roof was asking. But if he does file an appeal, there will be a different appellate set of lawyers who specialize in those kinds of things. And we'll be dealing with that. But Judge Richard Gergel, the judge who's presided over these entire proceedings, appointed Roof's current counsel, the ones that Roof fired when he went into the sentencing phase so he could represent himself. And so the judge said that he was reluctant to do that. In terms of what it means for Dylan Roof, I'm not exactly sure. You know, he got rid of his lawyers. He said he wanted to do this in his own voice and represent himself. The fact now that he wants new lawyers, I think maybe he's realized that there are just a lot of legal ins and outs that if you have no legal training, and particularly for a case of this magnitude, it can be pretty difficult to try to learn on the fly.
You know, there's a mechanical quality to this trial, it seems, and you've described it here. I'm wondering if, just looking at the whole proceeding, has it underscored the pain that the victim's community is still suffering and suffered at the time of this crime? And in any sense, do you get a feeling that Dylan Roof represents a constituency in the community of South Carolina, or is he a lone wolf?
I think that to say that, you know, this was a painful circumstance for South Carolina, you're absolutely right. I was in Charleston the night of the shootings. I knew Clemente Pinckney from covering the state legislature. And it seems that just about everybody you talked to had some sort of connection. Certainly Charleston is a place that a lot of people love, both to visit and to live there. And I can't imagine that Dylann Roof is representative of a lot of people here in the severity of his beliefs. You know, clearly he said he'd read things online and he had watched certain movies about white supremacy, but this is obviously taken to an extreme. The planning and all of the thought process that went into targeting this specific church. There's no evidence he communicated with anybody about his plans or anything of that nature. So it does seem like it was a singular situation, but this process has moved through, I think, on the quicker side of things for a case this involving 33 separate counts. And that's just a heck of a lot. And, you know, I think that people in Charleston particularly are looking toward this as perhaps the first stage of closure. The state is still pursuing its own case, which, as I mentioned, is separate. But all of these shootings and the graphic nature and the fact that this happened at a church in the middle of a city that so many people love, that ripped a major wound in a lot of people.
Well, I can hear the toll that it's taken on you, but incredible work. Meg, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Meg Kennard is political and legal affairs reporter for the Associated Press, based in South Carolina.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.